Well, obscene is relative, but I would say safely, you can ask for whatever you think you want to ask for, pop it up to 20% more, and then maybe start there. In the absence of knowing what the pay scale is or the pay band is, which I hope more employers begin to offer, it is unfortunately still on, the power is totally in the hands of the employer. And so to tip that scale a little bit, you need to go in there and be very optimistic and ask for more than you think the job would pay. More for women, I say this, because we do tend to undercut ourselves and short sell ourselves.
That was Farnoosh Torabi, America's leading personal finance expert, hooked on helping you live your richest and most fulfilling life. Hello, everyone. I am Celeste Headlee. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This episode is brought to you by Fidelity, and it's really a perfect way to kick off Financial Literacy Month. The New York Times calls today's guest perfectly practical, and I have to agree with that. Farnoosh Torabi is the editor-at-large of CNET Money, multi-best-selling financial author, and the creator and host of the So Money podcast. I learned so much from this conversation, and I know you're going to get a lot out of it as well. We covered many of the financial basics and also got the chance to dive a little deeper and explore the impacts of inflation and financial fear on your wallet. So much more than that, though. So let's get started. Gotta take it on. So you say conversation and money in the same sentence, and sometimes for some people that gives them hives. It is difficult to talk about money, not only because many cultures think that talking about money is not polite conversation, but also because I think for many people, there's some shame associated with it, right? Many people don't feel like they've made the right decisions. That becomes a reflection on their own character, and so they don't want to talk about it. How do you get past this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that I was really lucky in that I grew up in a household where money was not taboo. That's not to say that my parents didn't bang fists on tabletops talking about money. There were good conversations and there were not so great conversations. But nevertheless, I grew up with a fluency around money. We also, my parents are immigrants, so there was this strive for the American dream. And with that came lessons on how to navigate your career and how to buy a house and how to build credit, because they came here with none of that. And so starting from the ground up, that was a real gift to witness. And I think it gave me some language and some emotional strength around the topic that I know people don't normally get. And to your question about like the hives that we get around money, I mean, those are serious, real threats. And I want to first let people know that you're not alone when you feel that way. And it may help to recognize that money is just a thing. It's a tool. It doesn't really become anything until we interact with it, until we engage with it. And so I often say that money is like this tool, but it's a reflective tool too. When we look at money, when we think about it, it says things about ourselves. And so we need to sit with that and figure out, what is it telling me about myself? Do I like what it's telling me? Do I not like what it's telling me? What is the reason behind this? So in essence, what I'm asking people to do is to figure out their story around money. How did you arrive at these hives? It's not just, it didn't just happen because you heard the word money, like something triggered you. And that is the first step for everybody to unpack those experiences in the past that, and also the ones that are still happening that are creating a narrative around money that you just don't like. And to know that you can change that narrative, but it does require getting to the root and bottom of things first.
Well, that brings us to our current moment in time, because for many people, the past 2 years have been tough, financially especially. And I know for myself, when you talk about that narrative, I had to ask myself a narrative about, as a freelancer, as so many people are, what kind of benefit is there in finding at least one gig that brings in steady income, right? So what kind of things can women especially be thinking about now as they perhaps begin to recover from financial stress?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I would encourage women to do is to still think big and plan. We often think that we can't have hopes and dreams until there is some money to work with. And I know so many women were outed from the workforce. That wasn't the plan. Their plan was to continue working, but the pandemic had other plans. And women more than men were left unemployed in the pandemic because often who's taking care of everybody else? It's women. They're leading that charge. And so that coupled with a career in a pandemic was just unsustainable. So we saw a lot of women be forced out of the job market and still recovering. I mean, the men have recouped all of their job losses as of the last jobs report. Women, they have not. So my advice is don't wait for the job to anticipate the goals and the things that you want to accomplish. Start writing them down. Start talking about them with people you trust. There is real science that proves that when we visualize what it is that we want and we make a plan, not saying the plan's going to work out perfectly, but it does lead to more success. Take, for example, if you have a savings goal, just actually sharing that with a friend or your partner, it not only increases your chances of saving, but it means that you will save more money because it just becomes top of mind. And I think when you associate those goals with the real change that you want to see in your life, like you wanted to make freelance money so that you can, I'm sure you had goals attached to that. There was a why behind that. So really getting really clear about like, why do I want more money? Why do I want a particular career? I think can be really a powerful exercise. And then control what you can control. So there's so much luck, I will be the first to admit, that influences people's financial prosperity or failures, to be honest. I mean, like the world has a way of working out on its own, and we can't obviously control things like pandemics and recessions and systemic problems. But if there are areas of your life that you can create change, even small change, like saving a little bit more because you found a way to cut back on a cost in your budget, creating a little bit of extra revenue, even if it's just 5 hours a month that you're dedicating to a side hustle, you got to start somewhere. And I always find that when you start, that is the hardest thing. And then once you see the results, you do get motivated. You do start to see, hey, maybe I was shortcutting myself. Maybe this isn't as hard as I thought. And then also other things you can control is your environment. If you're around a lot of naysayers, it could be, you know, people in your family, your friends, the people you follow on social media that might be more negative than positive. I think that can also change the way you look at the world and not for the better.
Have you had disruptions to your career in recent years?
Well, the biggest disruption was probably in the last recession for me, the Great Recession in 2009, where I got laid off. And I say it was a blessing in disguise. Of course, at the time, I sat in bed and watched a lot of Bridget Jones' Diary for, you know, as long as I could. And I felt really bad for myself. And I was like, how could this happen to me? I felt like the world was out to get me. And I'll tell you, it's really easy to go into that rabbit hole. And really, it would have been so easy to just stay in bed. But I decided that I was going to change the story. I wasn't going to let this layoff define for me what it was going to mean. I was going to decide. And so I was at a crossroads. Like I said, it was the recession. So it wasn't like I had so many job options. As a journalist too, the media world was in some ways collapsing in some places and other places consolidating. So it was really hard to be able to replace the job that I had and make the money that I was. And so I was fortunate in that I had some savings that bought me some financial runway and time to figure things out. And what I finally landed on was, I'm going to do this on my own. I'm going to strike out on my own. Because while there's a lot of fear in not having a job of, you know, I'm talking a full-time job, and it's also scary to be an entrepreneur, but I chose for me the lesser of two fears. I was like, well, you know, there's uncertainty in both ways you look at it. There's uncertainty in going back to work for an employer who could lay you off without any notice, or being your own employer and dealing with the variance in pay and the inconsistency in work. I'm going to go with door number two because I don't know, part of me was just ready for it. And I will say that having that financial savings was invaluable. And I hear this a lot from guests on my podcast who've gone on to build big businesses and small businesses, that there's always going to be risk in anything you do, but giving yourself some savings, taking the time, even if it takes you a longer period of time to start that business or quit your job, because if you have savings, then it just means that you can afford yourself more options, more time. You don't make knee-jerk reactions. If I had no savings, Celeste, I probably would have just taken on any job just to obviously, you know, I had to pay my bills, but that's not ideal.
So maybe we can talk about some of the other disruptions that can impact people's finances and your advice for how to recover from them. One thing that you say that's interesting is that we should all be thinking about climate change in terms of our financial plan. What do you mean?
Yeah, we just did a big feature on this at CNET Money. We're really proud of the coverage because we don't think enough people are talking about money at the intersection of climate change. But you know, climate change is not an issue in its own silo. It is something that is, whether you're talking about the war in Ukraine, there's climate implications there. You're talking about the pandemic, there are climate implications. You're talking about money, there are things we have to keep an eye out for. And so being able to see where the world is headed is important when you're planning your life. When you start to see trends, I mean, there's no denying that climate change is rearing its head. It's changing the way that we live and work and the costs that we pay for things. And so being able to anticipate this in your own life, whether it's because you live near a coastline or because you have a business that is still dependent on fossil fuel and you haven't made the change to being more carbon neutral, these are things that you can foresee, and it would behoove everybody to start making little to big changes in their lives, in their work, in their businesses to prepare for that so that the cost won't be as dire and that you won't be scrambling in a moment of urgency and emergency, but rather you can, like, you know, when the storm comes, you're like, yep, I have the French drain, you know, I have the dehumidifiers, you know, after the last season of climate wreckage that we saw in the United States, like, I guess like the months of August and September were particularly devastating for people who lived in, say, the West Coast, who were experiencing drought and fires, and then all the way to Florida and the Gulf states where you're seeing hurricanes just wipe out farms and crops and people's homes. And my parents live on the West Coast of California and Northern California. And although they weren't in the thick of the fires, they were experiencing the residue of that, which is, you know, pollution, air pollution. And they also had, prior to that, a lot of drought that they were dealing with. And they're heading to retirement. You know, we were talking seriously about, should they relocate as a preemptive strike to climate change? It's going to get worse before it gets better. You don't want to ever be in a place where you're like, yeah, I saw that coming and I did nothing about it.
Mm.
It is asking people to face their fears. And I'm writing a whole book about fear and how it can be an agent for positive change in our lives. We often tell people, try to be optimistic, be fearless. And sometimes that is the absolute worst advice. It does not prepare you for the realities of life. It just keeps you in this state of denial sometimes.
Okay, so there's something else going on right now that might be impacting people's finances. I mean, maybe they made the best plan and best budget in the world, and then suddenly we have inflation that means they're spending more on groceries. They're spending more on gas than they planned for.
Mm-hmm.
How can we get through this period of inflation without going into debt?
Yes, I think resilience, and now more than ever, is so important. The ability to be willing to adapt. And I say this, and I recognize that inflation is, you know, I was reading the other day, it's like an extra $276 a month for an average household. And that's before we saw the inflation numbers skyrocket the next month. So it's only going to get more expensive for households. You know, putting gas in your car, depending on where you live, could be anywhere from an extra 15 to 20 bucks a month than it was this time last year. So these are real hard costs. And in your financial life, you always got to be looking at, like, what are all the different levers that I can pull to offset some of these shifts that I just can't control? What are the things that I can control? You can control perhaps some of your discretionary spending. You can control sometimes the money that you make. I mean, have you asked your employer for a raise? Have you looked to starting a side hustle? At CNET Money, one of the most popular videos we just did was on how to start a reasonable side hustle, making an extra $500 a month, which can be life-changing for a lot of people. But, you know, it doesn't really require that much time every month to earn. You know, if you have an extra 10 or 15 hours a month, that's a lot for some people. But when you think about making that $500 a month, maybe you'll find the time, because that can mean the difference of total disruption in your financial life because of inflation, or keeping status quo. And these are the things that I encourage people to examine. You know, what are the forces in your life that you can control when life hits you with a curveball?
You're listening to Women Amplified, featuring Farnoosh Torabi, editor-at-large of CNET Money and multi-bestselling financial author, also creator and host of the So Money podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate it, review it, share it with others. That's how this podcast spreads, and that's how we're able to reach as many people as possible with these brilliant minds and great advice. This episode of Women Amplified, Let's Talk Money with Farnoosh Torabi, is proudly sponsored by Fidelity. Fidelity Investments values supporting the financial health of communities by creating access and opportunities that support saving for the future, investing, and building generational wealth. Now, let's get back to my conversation with Farnoosh. At this moment in, I guess, recovery from the pandemic, What should most of us be watching for? What are the things we should be thinking about, concerning ourselves? You've already talked about climate change, but are there other things that we might be able to foresee?
Well, I think one of the rude awakenings of the pandemic was that we're just all overworked. And I think some of our priorities were really messed up. And it wasn't really our fault. It's because, you know, we live in a capitalist world. And so what's more of a priority than like meeting your boss's deadlines and being productive at work? But I think we learned in the pandemic that that comes at a really big cost. And I loved seeing the great resignation that happened in 2021 with people leaving. And I mean, that's, everyone made their own choices for different reasons of why to leave. But a big reason was because people were just burnt out. And I think they were able to leave their jobs because the pandemic, the other thing that the pandemic afforded us, for some of us, if we were fortunate to continue having jobs, was to save, because we weren't traveling, we weren't spending as much discretionary income. And so the savings rate in this country shot up to like 30%, the personal savings rate. Before the pandemic, it was like zero, maybe a few percentage points on average a month, but it went up to 30%. That's like, historically, I haven't seen that in my lifetime. And so that, coupled with the realization that I hate my employer, or like, I hate, why am I in this career? We had been just kind of like Joe versus the volcanoing it for a long time. And that's an old reference to my Gen X friends.
Yeah, totally. I'm also Gen X. Yeah. Great movie. Super underrated.
Yes, yes, yes. Like, you just get up and you do the drills without questioning them. And I think that all came to a head. And I think it was really important that it did. And it was unfortunate that it had to happen that way. But I think the lesson that we take away from this, that I hope endures, is that health is wealth, that your priority is to yourself first. And that's easier said than done, I know, because the bills don't care if you're in a good mood or in a bad mood. They're due when they're due. But I think it is important that we put employers more to this test of like, making sure that they are looking out for us and asking for what we need. There's never been a better time in the job market as job-seeking people to be selective, to ask for things that we would have been scared to ask for maybe 5 years ago. Like, what sort of benefits do you have to address things like mental health at this company? What are your feelings and what are your policies around leave of absence? What are your policies around promotion and pay? And what is the salary band? And having more transparency ahead of time can also manage expectations better and help you plan your financial life better. If you know you're in a job where you start out at a certain pay rate, but you know there's potential for more because they've told you this is the scale, that is also something that I'm seeing more employers require it. States are requiring it. And you better believe that has happened simply because the people are asking for it and demanding it. And the employers that are getting the best talent are the ones that are doing this sort of stuff. And so that's the silver lining I see. But to answer your question, I think addressing mental health, the toll it can take on not just our health, but our financial lives, is, I think, more at the forefront. And I'd like to see it stay there.
I wonder if you have advice on how to get through that conversation. So many women hesitate or feel bad about asking for too much money. I remember reading Cindy Gallup, the marketing consultant, saying, think of an obscene amount of money to ask for and then take one step below that.
Yes.
Oh, that's your advice too.
Kind of. Yeah, I would echo that. I think, well, obscene is relative, but I would say safely, you can ask for whatever you think you want to ask for, pop it up to 20% more, and then maybe start there. In the absence of knowing what the pay scale is or the pay band is, which I hope more employers begin to offer, it is unfortunately still on, the power is totally in the hands of the employer. And so to tip that scale a little bit, you need to go in there and be very optimistic and ask for more than you think the job would pay. More for women, I say this because we do tend to undercut ourselves and short sell ourselves.
Yeah.
I just did a podcast interview with Ruchika Tulshin, who wrote one of the most popular Harvard Business Review pieces, co-wrote it, which is called Stop Telling Women We Have Imposter Syndrome. We are systematically told that we are less than, and that gets to you. And it's a false narrative sometimes that we buy into, and it has serious repercussions in how we show up at work, how we ask for money or don't ask for money. And so that's important, is to recognize sometimes you're buying into a belief system that is false, that is meant to oppress, and you need to be smarter than that and say, nope, I'm 100% worth it. And here's the other thing I would encourage us to do, men and women, but particularly women, because I struggle with this too, and I think I'm not alone, is to disassociate worth and value. Like we often say, like, ask for your worth. But what does that trigger? It makes you feel like you're asking for your, like, it's self-worth. And if you don't get paid a certain amount of money, it makes you feel bad because it's reflecting on you. Think about what you're asking for. If you're asking for a raise, think about attaching that more to what is the value that I'm bringing to this company. You're not getting more money because you're nice. You're not getting more money because you're a helper. That maybe is how you're worthy. But in terms of your value, it's like, how are you contributing to the bottom line, right? It's not about like putting in more hours. It's about productiveness, your accountability, your ability to bring in more revenue, whether it's directly or indirectly, but being able to really articulate that, illustrate that, point it out. These are the ways that I think the best negotiations happen, is when the pay-seeking person is very matter of fact about why their value is worth what they believe it is.
I could go back and replay that answer about 6 times. Like, that's incredibly useful.
Let that be your morning mantra. I'm happy exactly. To, you know, just brushing your teeth and hearing that. I mean, what a way to start your morning.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we could probably just end there with a mic drop, but we're not going to. Because I want to talk a little bit about your new book that's planned, I guess, coming out next spring,
yes.
Like a year from now.
Yes, A Healthy State of Panic.
Which is a very intriguing title. The subtitle is Winning at Life When the World is Out to Get You. What do you mean?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's a tongue-in-cheek subtitle because the world, I mean, certainly on days it does feel like the world is out to get me.
It does.
You know, I didn't ask for this pandemic. What's going on? Thanks. So it can feel personally attacking for sure. And truthfully, it depending on your own circumstance, I mean, if you're in a hostile work environment, if you're in a hostile relationship, there are forces working against you and they're very intentional. You know, racism is intentional. Sexism is intentional sometimes. We often bill it as like, oh, this accidental thing. I didn't realize I was being racist or sexist or ableist. But I think that's up for debate. And so what I mean by a healthy state of panic, and this book is part memoir, part sort of prescription, big idea, is dismantling fear. I grew up the poster girl for fear. I was, again, the daughter of immigrants who came here just petrified. You know, they were like,
yeah.
They didn't want to risk anymore. They came here, like their risk meter was completely depleted. Like, think about leaving your country.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Like, they're like, we're good with risk. Like, we're done. You know, like, we have stopped taking chances because we just took a huge leap of faith. It thankfully worked out. We landed on our feet, but we're good. And so as a result of that, they replaced that with a lot of fear as a way to, meant for me, to keep me in line and in check, because they didn't trust systems. They just didn't, they were unfamiliar. And frankly, like, I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts for part of my childhood, which in the 80s, the New York Times called it nobody's first choice. So like, it was a lot of crime, a lot of like 5 o'clock news, sort of like top of the newscast crime, like child kidnappings and rape and murder. And so that happened. I mean, still happens, but the news chose to make that the top story back then. And my mom, who didn't speak English and all the things, like, again, she channeled her fears into me. But the flip side of that is that it delivered a lot of strength in my life, like being able to navigate through life, as I say in the book, like with ninja-like skills, like looking over my shoulder constantly, but also it gave me this street smarts and this ability to like cut through a lot of life's BS and to use fear as almost my superpower. Because when we're afraid, the fear isn't, it didn't just show up for no reason. Sometimes it does, but a lot of times it doesn't. It's there for a reason. It's rooted in something in you. It would be great if we could just sit with it for a little bit longer, as opposed to what the prescription currently is out there, which is like, ignore it, be fearless. One of my favorite quotes is from Caroline Dooner, who wrote Tired as F. And she wrote, you know, this idea of fearlessness, it doesn't mean you're a hero. You're not brave. I'm sorry to tell you, it means you're a psychopath, because you know what I mean? Like, fearlessness. Yeah. I can't afford to be fearless, Celeste. I have kids. I have a mortgage. I'm the breadwinner in my marriage. I need fear to direct me towards healthy choices. Now, from point A to point B, there's some learning that has to happen. And that's where the book sort of shows up for everybody, is like, okay, I have this fear. I don't want it to like run me into a brick wall or stop me in my tracks. Okay, Farnoosh, how do I harness this? How do I intellectualize this? And that's what I hope the book gives readers. But through it too, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll see yourself in it. You'll like learn about the little girl who took a razor to her unibrow and tried to change her name multiple times throughout elementary school. This is me I'm talking about, you know, because I was so scared of, I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be this. I wanted to be that. I wanted to fight the fears. Didn't work. Did not work. So anyway, more to come in the spring of next year.
I mean, before we end, I gotta continue on in this theme, because so much of what we've talked about today is based in how to respond to fear, right? Mm-hmm. When adverse events happen, whether you're leaving a job, whether it be a huge bump in inflation, you know, the pandemic, a lot of people probably right now are afraid.
Yes.
I would imagine that the past couple of years have made people feel more afraid than they might otherwise have felt, because bad things happen. Maybe they felt they weren't fully prepared for them. And I wonder what other advice you have at this point. I mean, we always hear prepare for it.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, make sure you're prepared. That only helps me next time. What do I do now?
So here's my advice. We say we're scared. What are you really afraid of? Like, go to that really dark place, experience the nightmare, and go there, because not because I want to get everyone to wet their pants. I want you to really like understand what is at stake. You know, in the financial advice world, we often say when you're trying to achieve like a happy goal, have a why attached to it. Like, have something that is anchored in a desire that can motivate you to get to that goal, because just trying to get out of debt, like, okay, that's nice, but it's a hard journey. So you have to root it in something exciting, like this will enable me to then start the business or like have a kid without feeling constrained because I've got this debt. Similarly, if you're afraid of something, I want to encourage you to go to the dark place so that you can see the stakes. And that, I think, can identify why you're so afraid. When we're so afraid, Celeste, what actually that fear is telling us is that we care a lot about something. So what is that something that you're really insistent on protecting and that you want to endure? Because that is your why. And that is going to be so powerful for you as you then start to plan. Because yeah, you have to plan at the next step. And you might also realize there are things I can do right now to avoid getting to that dark place in real life. And that's the exercise. And it shows up in a variety of different fears that we experience. Like if you fear failure, if you fear rejection, if you fear losing your freedom, which is different for everybody, that has many connotations, but identifying what is at stake if your fear comes true. Like I have always been motivated by that, you know, to actually see, oh my gosh, if I actually don't change something in my life today with inflation, with job uncertainty, with this, with that, I think I'm scared now. There's a scarier place waiting for me on the other side of not doing something right now, of not having a plan, of not going back into my budget, of not asking for more money. Like I think asking for money is scary, but what if I don't? That's scarier because that's going to leave me in a place far worse than where I am today if things keep going the way that they're going. So I always say, like, we think we're scared, get more scared, because that's like, you need to use that adrenaline that is a good adrenaline. If you can really intellectualize it, go there and then use it as like almost weaponized to cut through the fog and the uncertainty. And then you get to like, okay, here's what I need to do. Here are two things I can do today. Here's five things I can do over the next year. Nothing like fear.
That was Farnoosh Torabi, the editor-at-large of CNET Money, a multi-best-selling financial author, and the creator and host of the So Money podcast. You can purchase a copy of her book, When She Makes More, at our online bookstore at conferenceforwomen.org. And to learn more about her work, check out her So Money podcast or visit www.farnoosh.tv. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California, and of late, online. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This episode is brought to you by Cisco. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.